The top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff, is calling the memo written by Republican members, quote, a political hit job on the FBI in service of the president. The president responded on Twitter to the man that he called Little Adam Schiff, saying, quote, he is one of the biggest liars and leakers in Washington. As the Democrats push to release their own memo as a rebuttal to the first one, the government is scheduled to run out of money again by Thursday, with still no legislative solution to the impasse over immigration. And then there's the issue of government funding, with Congress on a course to borrow almost $1 trillion this year, almost twice what it borrowed in the last budget year of the Obama administration. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Kate Archer Kent this morning, and we've got a lot to talk about with our guest, Kyle Chaney, a congressional reporter at Politico. We want to hear from you. Do you agree or disagree with President Trump, who says the Nunes memo clears him of any wrongdoing in the Russian investigation? Do you think the Democrats should stand their ground on an immigration deal? Or do you think they should sign that and support that continuing resolution to keep the government open? You can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can put a comment on our webpage, ideas@WPR.org. Or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Before we get into the Mueller investigation and the conflicting arguments about the release of those memos, let's spend a few minutes, Kyle, talking about the stock market. U.S., Asian, and other markets have fallen precipitously in the past few days. On Monday, the Dow Jones Industrial Average had the largest drop in one day in its history. So what should we make of all of this, especially given President Trump's optimistic comments on the economy during the State of the Union address?
Well, you nailed it there, Glenn. I think that people are looking at this through the lens of the way President Trump has talked about the stock market, which is taking credit essentially for its surge since around the time of his election and even before. It's been on an upward trajectory. But I think the smarter economists know that these sharp changes in the stock market are not necessarily indicative of, you know, any particular policy, any government policy, and actually could be a sign of some positive economic signs as the economy has grown, wages are rising, and it may be a sign that the Fed's going to raise inflation rates. And therefore, there's a lot of things you can read into it, but probably not the day-to-day changes that should be meaningful.
Well, I'm not an economist, but the president and his supporters often point to the stock market. Even those who say they don't like some of the things that the president says and does, they point to the markets and their 401ks as evidence that the president's policies are working. What would it do to the Trump presidency if we are really entering a bear market that would wipe out some of the gains of the past year?
Well, that's the danger, right? That's the risk of taking credit for the stock market rise. It will inevitably sink, as it did in a dramatic way yesterday. And so the White House put out a pretty bland vanilla statement saying, well, you know, the fundamentals of our economy are strong, but that's not how the president talks about the stock market. So he's going to have a political problem if the stock market continues to sink.
Could the drop in markets have anything to do with reports that Congress is on track to borrow almost $1 trillion this year, which is over 80% more than it spent last year, the last budget year of the Obama administration?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's sort of multiple prongs. Again, some of them could be construed as positive, the way wages are rising, and I think, you know, other positive economic signs, but that's another factor, is that borrowing rate, that borrowing capacity. And it's always risky to read sort of the tea leaves on that stuff as to what's driving the market on any given day, but we could be on the precipice of a big stock market correction, given how much it surged in the recent months.
Well, an analysis by the Washington Post blamed the new Republican tax law for the $1 trillion deficit because there won't be as much tax revenue flowing into the government coffers. Could this be linked to the drop in the markets? You've got a large deficit, a juiced economy. That means inflation, and that means higher interest rates.
Absolutely, and I think it resulted in less revenue coming in quicker, and in fact, it means the government's going to hit its borrowing capacity weeks, maybe months sooner than it expected, which could set up another high-stakes showdown on Capitol Hill over that, which is never really positive for the economy or from an investor standpoint.
And we've got some more breaking news. Yesterday, the New York Times said that Trump's lawyers are advising him not to talk to Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller and perhaps to ignore any subpoenas. What do you think the reaction would be to that?
Well, this has been the moment we've been waiting for, is how is Trump himself going to handle Mueller? And it sounds like at least his lawyers are telling him, don't do it. Don't go in there. You're walking into a trap. You could expose yourself to certain criminal things that maybe you wouldn't be if you just shut him out. And that's going to have political ramifications because people want him to cooperate. The polls show that. He's even said on the record that he wants to sit down with Mueller. So if he suddenly changes course, people are going to ask a lot of questions about, well, what does he have to hide? And maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's just a legal strategy. But it's going to raise all those questions again and shine a light on this investigation.
Well, some say that it could even lead to a constitutional crisis. If you have a situation where he refuses to talk to Mueller and then they go to the grand jury and issue a subpoena and he refuses to go along with the subpoena, where do we go from there?
Well, in a way, choosing not to testify would put the ball back in Mueller's court. And does he want to precipitate that confrontation, that constitutional issue? And he may very well. He may have a strategy that says that's the way to go. But if he does issue a grand jury subpoena, that would put the president in a very difficult situation. And again, call into question, what can law enforcement do if they believe that it's a president who needs to be investigated or interviewed? And it's really a situation we haven't seen in a very long time.
We're talking politics this hour with Kyle Chaney. He's a congressional reporter with Politico. 1-800-642-1234 if you want to join the conversation. Our lines are wide open right now. 1-800-642-1234. Or you can leave a comment on our webpage, ideas@WPR.org. Or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Let's talk about the Nunes memo, which is a labyrinth of complications right now. Can you briefly explain it for anyone who has been asleep for the last couple of weeks?
Sure, I'll do my best. So it really does come down to the Mueller investigation. As Special Counsel Mueller has investigated whether President Trump's campaign had any improper contacts with Russia, and whether the president himself may have tried to obstruct that initial investigation. It's gotten closer and closer to the president's inner circle. And as that's happened, you've seen Republicans in Congress start to raise questions about the FBI itself and say, well, maybe those investigators who have been pursuing Trump have some conflicts, have some biases. And so the Nunes memo was something crafted in secret over the last few months by Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee that suggests the FBI abused its spying authority to obtain a warrant to spy on a Trump campaign aide raise questions about whether the investigation itself began on improper or flimsy grounds.
Well, that was Carter Page, correct?
Yes, he was a sort of obscure foreign policy advisor who no one really had heard of prior to his joining the campaign.
Democratic lawmakers have accused that memo of being misleading and inaccurate, and they said the release was reckless since it was formerly classified information. Then it gets released, and a lot of people are saying, well, there's not really anything there. You can't have it both ways, right? Was it reckless? Did it breach national security, or was there nothing there?
I think the hype definitely played into that to a degree. And anytime you're talking about releasing classified information, especially FISA information, which the FBI considers some of its most closely held secrets, you're going to get into some of that hyperbole. I do think the FBI itself did say they viewed the memo as misleading, not necessarily dangerous to national security, but just didn't present the facts in their complete context. And so I think that's where you saw the most tension as to whether the Republican memo omitted a lot of crucial context that suggested more impropriety than actually was there.
So the Democrats now have their own memo, which would be a rebuttal to the first one. And last night, the House Intelligence Committee voted unanimously to release that rebuttal, which was also formerly classified. President Trump still has to authorize the release. He's got 5 days to do that. What do you think he's going to do?
Well, the White House has signaled they're willing to cooperate with Democrats, but there's degrees here. This process is very complex, and it's never been used before until this last week with the Republican memo. So it's unclear. He could simply allow it to come out, but doesn't have to necessarily declassify it formally, which would put Congress in the uncomfortable position of releasing still classified information. And so he may, you know, again, they signaled cooperation, but there's a lot of nuances within that that they could choose to use.
Well, what do you think we can expect from the memo? What's going to be in it?
So the Democratic memo is going to essentially suggest, we only know broadly, but just it's going to go point by point down the Republican version and say, here's what they left out, here's what was missing, and why this isn't as big a deal as they made it out to be. And I think it will suggest the main thing the Republican memo said was the FBI relied on a political document, this dossier of unverified material, to get a court warrant to surveil Carter Page.
It is The Morning Show. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Kate Archer Kent. We're talking about memo madness in Washington and everything else political with our guest Kyle Cheney, a congressional reporter for Politico. But first, this news. It is The Morning Show. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Kate Archer Kent. Our guest today is Kyle Cheney, congressional reporter for Politico, discussing memo madness in Washington, the release of a memo written by Republican David Nunes, Democrats, and some Republicans saying that memo did nothing to undermine the Mueller investigation of Russian involvement in the 2016 elections. We've also got the looming threat of another government funding crisis, and we've been talking about the nosedive in the stock market. In fact, let's go to Raj in Gurnee, Illinois right now, who's got a question related to the stock market. Raj, you're on The Morning Show.
Hi. I wanted to ask the guest the question of the drop in the points with the Dow and how the middle class families and the small company employees should be worried about and what should their action be.
Kyle?
Sure. Well Raj, I'm not an economist. I'm not an expert on this stuff. But everything I've seen from my much smarter colleagues who are is not to read too much into this volatility right now. This is a don't panic moment. This may be a natural correction to the stock market, just given how much it surged and was expected to sort of come back to earth to a degree. And again, it may be a sign of some positive economic signs as well, with the Fed maybe about to raise inflation rates given the economic growth. So I wouldn't overread into it. This is generally the advice I've heard people give.
Well, Raj, thanks so much for the phone call. Let's go right back to the phones right now. We've got Michael in Milwaukee. Michael, you're on The Morning Show with Kyle Cheney.
Good morning. Like I said to the screener earlier, I'm an older person, 71 years old, and I've watched politics for a few years. And my question is, why are we accepting the behavior that we see in politics today? I just can't comprehend it. And why do we find this acceptable? Why isn't there more outrage over it? And everybody kind of realizes that if you behave that way in the workplace or anywhere else, it wouldn't be acceptable. How can this be?
Kyle Cheney, that's a question I think that's on a lot of people's minds.
It is. I think there is a pervasive sense that there's an erosion of norms in politics, that the rhetoric has gotten coarser. You know, I think it's easy to blame the other side. I hear Democrats say Trump has coarsened the rhetoric in politics. You know, he can be pretty plain-spoken and attacks his opponents pretty aggressively. He has criticized the FBI in ways he's never seen before. And the fervor on the left, the anti-Trump fervor, has ratcheted up the temperature in Washington, too. So I think, you know, it's not necessarily a both sides issue, but this has just been a race to the lowest common denominator in politics. And it's why Americans, I think, generally are turned off to Washington. They don't follow the twists and turns every day, but they are kind of disgusted by what they see when they do see it.
Michael, let me ask you a question. What do you think we can do to bring more civility into our public discourse?
Well, I think that we can, at least some people can voice their opinions, but it seems like people are willing to accept anything, any behavior, as long as there's some personal gain involved. I mean, it seems like people are very willing to get rid of all their scruples and whatever. I mean, I was raised as a Catholic, and I'll tell you what, I'm not a practicing really Catholic anymore, but we were taught a certain way to behave, and that was how our society worked. And if you don't have certain rules and regulations as to how you're, or at least expectations as to how your people interact in your society, you just have chaos. And I think that's what we have right now. And the other thing is dishonesty. I mean, it's pretty obvious to see there's just a lot of bald-faced lying going on right now, and nobody's held accountable.
Michael, thanks so much for the phone call. Kyle Cheney, your reaction.
Well, you know, I think one of the things, too, here is every incentive in Washington and politics today is to play for your team as opposed to necessarily finding middle ground and compromise. It's all the incentives are stacked against that. And part of that is the media landscape. People go to their favorite media outlet that reinforces their preconceived views. And I think one thing people can do is to sort of go outside their comfort zone on what they're reading, what they use to get their information, and maybe that helps find understanding and why people have different views on things.
We're talking politics with Kyle Cheney of Politico, 1-800-642-1234. If you want to join the conversation, 1-800-642-1234, or you can put a comment on our webpage, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Well, Kyle, there is a lot of rancor in Washington right now. That's an understatement. At a campaign appearance in Ohio yesterday, Mr. Trump, perhaps facetiously, accused the Democrats who didn't applaud during the State of the Union address of treason, which, as you know, is a crime punishable by death. So apparently, if you don't applaud the president, you can be put to death if you take his comments literally.
Yeah, and, you know, the White House is suggesting this morning that, well, he was being tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, that's something you don't usually play around with, especially if you're a president. And I think that's what the last caller was getting at, too, was this coarsening in politics. You've never heard candidates accuse each other of being, or elected officials say you're a traitor or you're treasonous. And now it kind of gets thrown around, even by the president. And so Democrats are kind of in shock still over what he said.
Well, late yesterday, the House Intelligence Committee voted unanimously to publish the Democrats' memo, but now it's up to the president. He's got 5 days to decide whether he wants to go forward with the publication. What do you think would happen if Mr. Trump declined to punish it, to publish it, rather? What if he said, we're not going to publish the Democrats' memo?
So this is a very unusual House process that if the president objects, it doesn't actually stop them from bringing it up. What would then happen, it would go back to the House Intelligence Committee to decide, do we want to overrule the president? And they can decide if they vote to send it to the House, the full House of Representatives, to overrule the president, and then the full House would have to vote. So there is a mechanism there to get this information out, even if the president doesn't want to. The question is, will Republicans go along with that if Trump says no?
Let's go to Dan in my hometown of Wausau. Dan, you are on the morning show.
Good morning, Glenn. Thanks for listening to me. I agree with the previous caller. He said he was 70 years old, I believe. I think people wanted change in the country because of the way politics are going. And Donald Trump was elected president, and they thought he was going to drain the swamp, but it just seems like it's getting murkier. I just wish that people would realize when you talk to them, there's like an apathetic view out there that there's nothing we can do. But we as the electorate do have the power to change things. Maybe it has to start one level lower and work its way up. And once you start sending a message by going out and voting for people that truly are sincere about changing things and not just doing something because it's tied to money, that maybe we can make this a better country.
Dan, thanks so much for the phone call. Kyle Cheney, your reaction.
Sure. I think Dan's right. There's a lot of sentiment out there. It fluctuates, but that Democrats are going to have a huge year in 2018 in the midterms, given some of the pendulum swing against Republicans and President Trump in particular, who really stirs up a lot of passions in his opponents. And so we may see a dramatic shift in who runs Washington in a short few months.
Well, we're going to play some sound right now. Let's talk about the Republican response to the Nunes memo. House Speaker Paul Ryan said in a statement, quote, "I am glad that the memo helps to provide greater transparency. Other Republicans have also expressed support for the memo's release." Let's listen to U.S. Representative Dianne Black of Tennessee speaking on Fox News.
This is not a partisan issue. This should be a bipartisan issue. This All is right. serious stuff when the government is allowed to go and investigate American citizens without having good reason to do that.
But others in the Republican Party, including John McCain, have been openly critical of the memo and essentially said that it doesn't amount to much. Here's Representative Trey Gowdy of South Carolina on Face the Nation.
There is a Russia investigation without a dossier. So to the extent the memo deals with the dossier and the FISA process, the dossier has nothing to do with the meeting at Trump Tower. The dossier has nothing to do with an email sent by Cambridge Analytica. The dossier really has nothing to do with George Papadopoulos's meeting in Great Britain. It also doesn't have anything to do with obstruction of justice. So there's going to be a Russia probe even without a dossier.
And we should note that Trey Gowdy will not be running for re-election this fall. But Kyle, how should we understand the Republican response to the Nunes memo?
So Trey Gowdy is an interesting case because he's actually the only Republican in Congress who has seen the underlying evidence that was behind the classified intelligence that's behind that memo. And so when you hear from him, he's got the authority of knowing what was actually underneath it. And so I think you're seeing a divide among Republicans. There are those, the president's closest allies are saying, this memo vindicates everything. The investigation is a sham. Robert Mueller has to go. And then you have people like Trey Gowdy and supporters of the FBI who say, well, let's separate out what may be legitimate concerns about how FISA was used to spy on Carter Page versus the actual Russia investigation, which is a serious thing. And those two wings of the party are kind of pushing against each other right now.
And on Twitter, Trump has praised Devin Nunes, and he also condemned Adam Schiff, the ranking minority member on the committee, calling him little Adam Schiff and calling him, quote, one of the biggest liars and leakers in Washington.
Yeah, and I think that timing of that tweet against Schiff came right as he knew he was about to get the Democratic memo for review, so unclear if he was trying to signal that he has a problem with that Democratic memo or even entertaining it. But it definitely turned up the temperature. We even heard some Republicans saying, hey, he should really cool it with that. You know, they don't all really like Schiff particularly either, but they don't think it's helpful to have him taunting Schiff either.
Do you think it's possible that the president won't release the memo? It would certainly be popular with a lot of the people who support him.
I think it's possible. I think he has to see what's in it, and you know, his aides are going to advise him on that. The question is it worse politically for him to get in the way of trying to be fully transparent here versus what's actually in the memo and whether it actually undermines the original Republican memo? So I think that's the calculus that's going on here.
And Representative Nunes is also saying that he'll continue to release more documentation of what he says are abuses by the FBI and the Justice Department. So we're going to have dueling memos, perhaps, for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and even beyond FBI and DOJ, Nunes has said the next project is the State Department, and he wouldn't really get into what, although we may have gotten a clue yesterday when Senator Grassley started asking questions about whether someone from the State Department was feeding Christopher Steele, the dossier author, information. So we're still waiting to see where that's going.
Is this something that's unprecedented in American history? Have we ever had a situation where there was this much infighting in the Intelligence Committee or even the politicization of the Intelligence Committee's activities?
That's actually the most striking thing about all this. The Intelligence Committee, even in difficult times, has usually been a bastion of bipartisanship. They understand the gravity of what they're dealing with, America's national security, and its most sensitive secrets. And they've put that partisanship aside. So this party line vote to release the Republican memo, this encouragement by the White House to sort of step on the FBI, that's unprecedented. And I think people are nervous about what that portends for the future. Is this a precedent now? Is this the new normal? And we just don't know yet.
And what about the FBI? There are reports that morale is down in the agency, not just with the top people who have been criticized, but the rank and file.
Yeah, and I think the new director, Christopher Wray, who was appointed by Trump, has actually been taken a position opposite the president on how to handle this memo, and I think that's emboldened some of the FBI leadership that, okay, he's with us. But yeah, I think you've seen the lurching and the attacking by the president and his allies that the FBI is corrupt, it takes a toll. How can it not? And the message from Ray to the team is you just got to keep doing your job, keep your head down, and just do what you're supposed to do.
1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Let's go to Lori in Menominee Falls. Lori, you're on the morning show with Kyle Cheney of Politico.
Thank you. Good morning, gentlemen. I'm calling in regards to the Nunez memo, and I'm wondering if Mr. Cheney is going to refer to the fact that at the very bottom of the Nunez memo, there is a statement that belies the Republicans' claim that the FISA warrant was issued on the basis of the dossier. Actually, it says that it was released for other reasons, and Nunez admitted as much on television yesterday, and he said that he had not read the memo, which we all knew, and he said also that the print was so small that he couldn't see that, even if he had read it, and therefore the entire argument about what the memo is supposed to have proven is not true.
Lori, thanks so much for the phone call, and what Lori is saying is that the memo clearly refers to the fact that this investigation into Russia involvement started before the FISA warrant was issued against Carter Page.
Exactly, and that was actually a key revelation in the memo. We'd seen reports of this, but it hadn't been confirmed that rather than this dossier, which has been extremely controversial, the FBI began its investigation of Trump campaign and Russia ties months earlier when a different advisor had been talking loosely to an Australian official and referenced some hearing from Russians that they had some damaging emails on Democrats. And that was actually a very notable because it means the dossier itself didn't precipitate this whole situation we're in. I think the other thing the caller was referring to was that Republicans claimed that the FBI failed to mention the political origins of the dossier, which had been funded by the Hillary Clinton campaign before it went to the FBI. And actually, Republicans have later since acknowledged that, well, the FBI did note its political origin. They just didn't specify that it was the Clinton campaign when they applied for the warrant from the court.
Do you think President Trump is going to fire Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein? He was ambivalent about it when reporters asked him about that directly.
Yeah, and he's been ambivalent for a while. And look, the White House has said every time when you ask if you still have confidence, they always say, well, if he doesn't have confidence in someone, they won't be here. So I guess you can only infer that he still wants him around. But he hasn't endorsed him. He hasn't said he's doing a good job. But it's politically dicey because he oversees Bob Mueller, and if you get rid of Rosenstein, it's going to be viewed as a direct attack on the investigation of him and his campaign.
And just a side note, it is Rod Rosenstein, not Rod Rosenstein. I've never seen a man's name mispronounced so many times by reporters on all the cable networks over the past few weeks. It is The Morning Show. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Kate Archer Kent. We're talking about memo madness in Washington, the possibility of a government shutdown, the lack of immigrant legislation, and the falling stock market with our guest Kyle Cheney, congressional reporter for Politico. But first, this news. It is The Morning Show. I'm Glenn Mobergen for Kate Archer Kent. Our guest today is Kyle Cheney, congressional reporter for Politico, as we discuss the bitter infighting in Washington over the release of a memo written by Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee and the demands of Democrats on the committee to release their own memo in rebuttal, all against the backdrop of a Thursday deadline to pass a continuing resolution to keep the government from shutting down and a nosedive in the stock market. So what do you think? Do you think enough Democrats in the conservative House Freedom Caucus will support the continuing resolution to keep the government open? And if not, who will be given the blame this time? And should Democrats hang tough and not support the resolution until they've seen progress on immigration legislation to help the Dreamers? We'd like to hear from you. You can give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or put a comment on our webpage, ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR-mornings. Let's go to Tom in Burlington right now. Tom, you are on the morning show.
I studied economics, which means I really don't know anything, at Georgetown University and the School of Foreign Service. I sent out a tweet a week ago, just before the State of the Union speech, and I pointed out the fact that the stock market was going up because of panic buying for the last year. The only way you could fight against inflation is by buying stocks, and I didn't want Mr. Trump to be taking credit for the stock market going up for all the wrong reasons. One of the big problems is they passed a $1 trillion, $500 billion tax cut before they passed a budget. You just don't do things like that. That's just doing things absolutely backward. And now he's got this program where they're going to spend $1 trillion, $1 trillion, $500 billion on infrastructure, which is... It has to be inflationary if the economy is already whistling along. So everything people are losing. You're talking about the Nunez reports. All these little things are adding up to actually no confidence. There's all this flip-flopping and back and forth on policies.
Tom, we got it. Thank you so much for the phone call, and Kyle Cheney, your response.
Yeah, I think he's right. I think this all does add up. This Nunez memo flap is really, you know, kind of small. It is a big precedent involved, but it's small potatoes when you're thinking about the, you know, what is the government doing to improve our, you know, Americans' lives, the economy, and the fact that they're hurtling toward a shutdown with no solution in sight. And again, all the incentives to pass the tax bill prior to getting a budget done, it adds up to why people don't have faith in Washington.
And John from Milwaukee called but couldn't stay with us. He says federal agencies were first weaponized during the Obama administration, so this isn't something that Trump has started. Kyle Cheney?
Well, and I think that people would say that the agencies have been weaponized even earlier than that, you know, in the J. Edgar Hoover days. And I think that, you know, you do hear that from Republicans. That's their whole premise of their argument, is the Obama administration, when they ran the FBI, DOJ, used the tools at their disposal to go after political enemies. Democrats really sharply reject that, and FBI officials have countered the Republican claims, but that's at the heart of their memo.
Let's go to Chris in Mount Horeb. Chris, you're on the morning show with Kyle Cheney of Politico. Hello,
thank
Chris.
Hi there. The Pew Center for Research has been tracking the polarization in our politics, and you know, in the last 3 or 4 months, they put out something that has some interesting infographics showing how things have separated, and there's really no middle ground anymore. And I think a big reason of that, if you can track that back to the rise of the cable news media, where essentially politics has become entertainment. And, you know, since the election, I have, and I'm not somebody who has cable television, but I can access a lot of this through YouTube. And I've made the effort to watch Fox News and watch Sean Hannity and some of the other shows, as well as watching some of the shows on MSNBC. And what's become apparent to me is that these programs are driven by ratings. They have to have the ratings to survive. And so every incentive is there for them to serve up red meat to their audiences. And
you say there's blame to – and, Chris, you say there's blame to go around. You say that MSNBC and Fox are both guilty.
I do, because, again, they have to – they're serving a particular audience, and if they do 5 days a week, they have to come up with multiple hours of programming. And that's tough to do. And again, you think about 25, 30 years ago, you just didn't have that. And again, you track that back to the polling that Pew has done, and you can start to see I believe, the impact of that in our politics.
Chris, thanks so much for the phone call. Kyle Cheney, your reaction to the 24-hour, 7-day-a-week cable news circus?
Well, I would even take it further than Chris. I think he's right that that's sort of the provenance of this. But now in the social media age, Twitter and Facebook has allowed individuals to craft sort of their own alternate realities where they only hear the voices they want to hear that reinforce their worldviews. That digs people into their trenches. You know, watching Fox and MSNBC is like living in two alternate realities when you watch one or the other. But then people can go further than that and really shut out the voices that they don't want to hear. I do agree that that has hardened people in their views.
And here at Wisconsin Public Radio, we believe in civil, rational discussion, and you won't hear us shout over people or talk over them. We give you a chance to respond and state your point of view, which we will do with Charlie in Platteville right now. Charlie, you're on The Morning Show with Kyle Cheney.
Hi there. My comment is that I think Gowdy said something very important for all Americans to listen to when he said that he was leaving the legislative area and going to the justice system. And that's that he saw the process being more we've got to win rather than having an integrity and doing what's best for the country. And I'll take any further comments off the air.
Charlie, thanks so much for the phone call. Kyle?
Yeah, I mean, Trey Gowdy's made no secret. He's been disillusioned with Congress and the political process for a long time, so his exit was inevitable. But I think that is a fair comment on the state of our system right now, which is everyone is playing to win. They're playing for their team as opposed to finding solutions. And Gowdy, the former federal prosecutor, I think he found more satisfaction in an area of government where you are about finding solutions and justice as opposed to scoring points.
Well, we've only got a few minutes left, so let's talk about funding the government. A few weeks ago, there was a 3-day partial shutdown with Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell agreeing to an immigration reform vote, or at least progress on it, by February 8th. Democrats had been threatening to not vote on a bill to fund the government and create cause a shutdown if an agreement on DACA wasn't reached. So February 8th is now 2 days away on Thursday. The House has moved forward on a temporary spending bill, but Senate Democrats have said they'll refuse to vote for it. So what do you think, Kyle? Are we going to get a rerun? Are we going to have another government shutdown?
The conventional wisdom is they're going to solve this thing, but how they do that is still anybody's guess. The House is almost certainly going to pass its version of a funding bill today, which with the votes of the Conservative Freedom Caucus, because they're going to attach a full year of defense spending to it. That's not going to fly in the Senate, where they'll either strip that out or try to come up with some other maneuver to get the 60 votes they need. But if they can't do that, or if they pass a stripped-down version and send it back to the House, there's no real clear path for how they reconcile that. So we may find ourselves back in the same position in a couple of days.
And if we do find ourselves in that position, who gets blamed for it?
I think the Democrats felt very chastened by the last shutdown. It was very brief, and so people have already kind of forgotten that it happened. It seems like ages ago. But I think everyone wants to avoid being in the situation again because it's so unpredictable. It's so volatile. And immigration is still nowhere close to a resolution, so unclear whether it would benefit anyone to shut it down while that's still in flux.
And do you think it's possible for us to reach some kind of a compromise on immigration in just a couple of days? It seems unrealistic.
Well, we've seen Mitch McConnell, the Senate leader, say he wants to have a vote next week. And so that was the word. He promised to have a vote. I don't know if it was before the February 8th deadline or in that vicinity. So he says he intends to keep his word. But the problem is no one knows what the substance of that vote will be. What package can pass the Senate, and especially what package can pass the Senate and have a prayer in the House? We just don't know.
And finally, let's talk briefly about gerrymandering. On Monday, the Supreme Court refused a request for a stay from the Republican Party in Pennsylvania after the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled that Republican leaders in that state had violated the state constitution by drawing voting districts to favor their party. This could help Pennsylvania Democrats in November, but are there broader implications? It means a lot to us in Wisconsin, where there's been claims that gerrymandering has helped the Republican Party.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty seismic development politically for 2018. Pennsylvania is one of the worst gerrymandered states in the country, so that would put a lot of potentially Democratic-leaning areas into play. This has broader ramifications. We've seen other maps get struck down all over the country, and I think there's just a broadening consensus that these gerrymandering to create uncompetitive districts is just not sustainable, both for democracy and based on what and the purpose of you know drawing political boundaries in the first place. So this string of court decisions is really changing people's perspective on it.
And do you think it's significant that the request was turned down by Justice Alito, who is generally viewed as the most conservative justice on the Supreme Court?
Yes, and I think that shows you this is not a partisan issue. That the Pennsylvania change may benefit Democrats, but all over the country there are these sort of wild configurations of political districts, and if those are suddenly no longer valid, it could reorder politics in the way campaigns are run in the future.
Well, it's the old adage that voters should choose the politicians. Politicians should not choose the voters. And Kyle Cheney, thank you so much for spending the last hour with us. It's been informative, and we covered a wheelbarrow full of topics. I really appreciate it.
Glad to be here, Glenn. Thank you.
This hour was produced by Colleen Leahy, with on-air production by Keely Boltina and technical direction by executive producer Michelle Johnson. Tomorrow at this time, we take a renewed look at the longest war in American history and how long will our troops be stationed in Afghanistan. We also look at long-term care insurance in the next hour in our regular Tuesday feature, On Your Money. I'm Glenn Mobrig in for Kate Archer Kent, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.